welcome to our new show, Breakfast Bites. We're proud to be honored with the presence of Chris Doering. We're a proud member of the Stadium & Gale Network. And this podcast is sponsored by our brand new partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA in Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. Give Guy a call if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. And you can call Guy at 386-752-7240. And we are grateful for his sponsorship. But, you know, a man that really doesn't need any introduction, former All-American, All-SEC, wide receiver for the Florida Gators, a Gainesville native. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? Good to be with you.
We're doing good. Like I said, pre-show, wish we were 2-0 headed to Death Valley doing this podcast, but I'll let Dev jump into it real quick. I know the whole premise of this show is kind of speaking about the rivalry that's coming up, but we're going to quick hit real quick the last Saturday's game versus USF.
Go
ahead. I thought you were asking me. Go ahead.
We don't want to dwell too long on South Florida, but when you lose at home in year four to an in-state school, it's bound to happen. We've been trying all week to make sense of what happened in the Swamp last Saturday. What stuck out to you the most, and where does the program go from here with the rest of this game?
It's disappointing. You know, I think my statement on Saturday night on SEC football final was just that. You know, year four, and we're talking about losing games to teams that we clearly have a better roster of talent, and some of the same mistakes still keep raising their heads over and over again. The penalties, the game management. I was critical of some of the play calling. I went back and watched the tape on Sunday, and it wasn't nearly as bad as what, you know, I kind of thought it was. There's opportunities for plays to be made there, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, your job as a coach is to recruit great players, put them in positions to be successful, and then, you know, have them finish plays. And if they don't finish plays, then you got to find guys that can finish plays. And right now, you know, whether it's penalties or bust in assignments, or, you know, just not being able to complete easy throws or catch balls that are there, just not clicking on all cylinders. And so, you know, after the 5-game losing streak at the end of the season last year, I think we all had high hopes for this year, but here we sit, 1-1 again, and the future of this season being in question. So I think it's a very frustrating position to be in. I'm sure you guys feel the same. And as for the future, I think there's a long way to go. Notre Dame lost their second game of the season last year at home to Northern Illinois and went on to the playoff. I'm not saying that's happening, but I do expect a better effort this week in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, and Coach Napier seems to have had the roster construction aspect of the program kind of under control. You know, this is the most talented roster that he's had since he's been in Gainesville. We heard that all offseason. But the game day shortcomings just consistently seem to rear their ugly head. As someone who's played the game, someone who studies the game, how is it that these same issues seem to pop back up over and over again?
Yeah, I think in terms of the game management stuff, it goes back to something we talked about last year. I mean, it's tough to be the head coach and the play caller. You're seeing it happen more often. And now it seems like a lot of the defensive-minded head coaches are going, you know, Brent Venables going back in to call in plays this year has been interesting. But Clark Lee, the Vandy coach, actually gave up the play calling duties to Steve Gregory as defensive coordinator. So I just think it's a lot to try to manage. I also think, and there's a lot of people on that sideline, man. I'm not sure what everybody does, and I'm not sure that they all know what they're doing. So I do think there needs to be a delineation of who's doing what, who's in charge of making sure everybody's on the same page. And you know, the substitution issues, the clock management. In a four-minute situation at the end of the ball game, you shouldn't be calling RPOs. And even if you are calling RPOs, the directive should be to your quarterback, hand the football off regardless of the look. We have the best four-minute back in all of college football probably, and Jaden Baugh, he deserves to have a chance to finish the ball game out. That's what you preach is, hey, we're going to be a team that runs the football. We got an offensive line that's veteran-oriented and experienced, and we have two heavy backs in the backfield that should be able to pick up yards regardless of the look and force teams to use timeouts. Two incompletions out of three plays. We get the ball with 2:54 to go, and we use 27 seconds and give it right back to them. So that's not smart football, in my opinion.
No, we are right there with you, and we discussed that on Sunday's recap show. But let's get into the meat of it. LSU, Florida, you know, in the 90s, Florida's bitter rivals were FSU, Georgia, Tennessee. You know that growing up, playing for the Gators in the area. But for Devin and Hunter's and I's generation, LSU's kind of jumped into that group from the Urban years through the Hurricane game. We've seen the LSU rivalry kind of blossom into one of the most intense games on the schedule. What's your experience? What's your experience going to these rivalry games? And do you have any fond or not so fond memories of playing in Death Valley?
Yeah, it is funny because I don't know that there's a school that has as many rivals as what we have, you know, and you mentioned some of them, and a lot of it has to do with when you became a Gator fan. You know, I grew up a Gator fan here in the late 70s, but the 80s were the years that I remember the most, and Georgia was the tormentor of my childhood. So I think about Georgia as Florida's primary rival. You know, Tennessee was one that kind of became an instant rivalry when we split up into divisions in 92. And, you know, that game we played in September against them early in the conference schedule, more times than not, determined not only the SEC East representative in Atlanta, but the ultimate SEC champion. So that rivalry is one that's huge. But LSU wasn't very good when I was at Florida in the 90s. I certainly remember great games between the Gators and LSU in the 80s. And it used to be a game where the road team had more success than the home team did. One of the big regrets about my college career at Florida, one of them would be never getting a chance to play the Miami Hurricanes, a team I grew up hating since both my parents were from Miami. And we used to go to the Orange Bowl to watch Florida and Miami every other year down there. So that was one that I look back with regret. But the other one is that I never really got a chance to experience Death Valley the way that the legend has it. We went there in 93, and I want to say we beat them 52-10 or something. It was a pretty ho-hum game. And then we went there in 95, and it was 11:30 a.m. local start. It was a morgue in that place, and really didn't, you know, I think 24-10 was the final. It was a, you know, kind of a lackluster game with not a lot of energy in the stadium. So I really feel like I never got to really get the full Death Valley experience, unfortunately.
What about with your role at SEC Network? Have you had a chance since then to go back and watch it from the sidelines or the booth and see that atmosphere in action?
Yeah, I've been there. I was there when I think it was Zook's year when we went there and beat him pretty good, had a big celebration. And yeah, we did – we did my local show from Pat O'Brien's on Friday, and I think everybody that was in attendance there was trying to bring me a shot. By the end of the show, my friends were like, "Dude, you did not sound good." And so that was a fun, you know, Friday experience. We won and went back to New Orleans on Saturday night, had a great time there. But you know, we handled business in Tiger Stadium that afternoon. But yeah, I haven't really been back since. I think the thing about LSU is that I'm surrounded by so many of the LSU folks at the SEC Network, whether it's Peter Burns, as I like to remind him, never actually went to LSU, but he's a huge LSU fan. You know, working with Booger McFarland and Marcus Spears, two of the all-time greats at LSU. I'm great friends with Jacob Hester. I've gotten to be friends with you know, the Booties and just so many of those guys that I have good friendships with. In fact, 2019, I felt like I was kind of on the LSU tour that year. I was at the SEC championship game in Atlanta with them. I was back for their playoff game against Oklahoma when they beat the hell out of them there in Atlanta. And then I was there for the national championship game against Clemson. So in a way, I think I kind of became a de facto fan. I think we all can appreciate that 2019 team and the excellence of that year for them. But I don't necessarily have the same disdain for LSU that I think a lot of Gator fans do.
Absolutely. And so even if it wasn't LSU for you, obviously you mentioned some of the big rivalries when you were there, like Georgia and Tennessee. Generally speaking, how did you feel the preparation changes when you're going up for one of these big SEC rivalry games versus you know, one of the more ho-hum type of games.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. You know, as much as I love playing in the Swamp, there was something kind of special about going on the road, you know, and experience all the hate and animosity that you get from fans in one of those SEC venues. It's like nothing else. And just, you know, being able to quiet 90,000 people with a touchdown, or being able to empty out a stadium like we did Sanford Stadium in 95. We came out after halftime and it was basically all orange and blue in there. So I've loved getting a chance to go play on the road. And, you know, I think the challenge is being able to maintain your emotions as much as you want to, you know, get fired up and, you know, let the crowd impact you and use that to fuel you. You can also go overboard and get too excited and commit stupid penalties and lose your focus on what the details are, especially on offense. I mean, I think it's defense is much more of an emotional game than it is playing offense. And so trying to make sure that you acknowledge how much fun you're having in that environment while not letting it distract you from your duties is the real challenge.
Yeah, now analyzing games weekly with the SEC Network, when you look at this year's Florida-LSU game, what sort of matchup should we as fans be looking for if the Gators are going to find success in Death Valley and turn around last week?
Yeah, I think, you know, LSU, the most remarkable thing from last year to this year is how much their defense has improved. And I think we all kind of expected it. Blake Baker is one of the best defensive minds in college football. Took Missouri on a huge jump from year one to year two when he was in Como. So I thought the same thing would kind of happen this year, and it has. Knowing how to utilize the pieces that he has on that side of the ball, knowing the players, knowing how the defense works a little bit more, I think has them playing faster and more comfortably. You go back and look, I mean, they bring pressures from all over. They're fast. They're physical. You know, I think our offensive line is going to have a really big task this week in trying to protect for DJ and also, you know, open up some running lanes. But, you know, I really do feel like Florida, while they play down to the level of competition too much, also play up to the level of competition. I wish they were a little bit more even keeled than that. But, you know, I for whatever reason, the last couple times we've gone to Death Valley, we've had a team that probably isn't as good, but we've been able to compete through, you know, 3.5 quarters. It kind of gets away from us at the end. And I expect a similar effort and hope that Florida can maintain all the way through the full 4 quarters.
Yeah, Hunter and I and several of our friends are going to be heading to Baton Rouge this weekend. I know what I would be saying to Billy Napier and to the team if we were talking to the team before we ran out onto the field. But what would your message to the team be if you were in Billy Napier's shoes as we're running into the field?
Yeah, I think, you know, the toughest thing by the time you get to game day has already been done, and that's putting the loss to USF behind you. You know, once you get back out on the practice field, once you're focused on LSU, you know, that loss to USF means nothing. It's in the rearview mirror. And I would present it as an opportunity. I mean, I think even more so, I know this now that my career is over with. You only get 12 opportunities to put that jersey on. You only get, you know, a few times in life to go into a venue where you're hated like this, and you get a chance to test yourself and compete at the highest level with as much visibility as this game's going to have. The message is seize the opportunity, take advantage of. Don't let it slip away. Let's go out and prove that last week was an aberration, and that we're a much different team than what people are giving us credit for after that game. So I think the message of opportunity is one that I'd be delivering over and over again.
Fire me up, Chris. Fire me up.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I was never really a rah-rah guy. I certainly consider myself to be a leader, but more of a leader by example. And you know, the rah-rah guy on our team was James Bates back in the day. He was the one that was, you know, a little out of control and you wanted to stay away from. But you know, for me, it was just. It was controlled aggression that you wanted to try to play with.
Well, Chris, we've seen Lagway, what he presented to the team last year, the last 6 games of the season, doesn't really have live reps. It's like going to the driving range for 9 straight months, but once you get on that first tee, you know, then you got out of bounds on both sides, you got water, you got a fairway to hit. It's kind of similar to what Lagway didn't have a live rush for, you know, 9+ months. You played for a coach that was known for switching quarterbacks. You know, obviously, Tremel is a freshman. He had a good showing against LIU. He's been raved about in fall camp. But if DJ struggles a little bit in this game or in future games, is there a possibility, you know, for Tremel Jones to get an opportunity, kind of create a spark a little bit?
I'd go back to your golf analogy, you know, 9 months of being on the driving range. It was 9 months of watching everybody else on the driving range hit balls, and you're just trying to, you know, to get the mental reps of watching it. So, you know, one of the things we were worried about was, you know, how was he going to look after missing so much time in the spring and during OTAs and early in fall camp? He looks rusty. He looks like he's processing things slowly. He doesn't look healthy. I don't know how healthy he is, but he certainly doesn't look, you know, healthy. And honestly, you know, I would probably – I don't know that I – DJ's your guy. I don't think you switch quarterbacks at all. But I do think you try to put him in some better positions. I'm tired of us rolling him out so often. You know, I think he played really well last year in the pocket when his hamstring was hurt. I may try to limit him to being in the pocket a little bit more. That throw on the interception on the post, like rolling to your right and throwing a deep post across the field, just not a wise throw. You know, I can't imagine they were happy about that. But I try to limit things a little bit more, try to get him some success early on and you know, build on those things. Defenses are taking away a lot of the deep throws. They saw the tape from last year. Make him throw the underneath, the intermediary throws. He hasn't had a ton of consistency in doing that. There were plays to be made. I mean, the throw on the tight end, you know, pick down the sideline to Livingston was perfect. Tough catch over your shoulder, but you got to catch that. DJ's got to step up, though. It had an opportunity down around the goal line, fading away way too much. So he's got to trust his protection, stand in there, deliver the ball. And I think just simplifying things for him a little bit may make it easier for him to get into a rhythm.
Great. We got just a few more minutes with you, and we'll jump into some quick hitters in this show. But everyone knows online or whoever watches SEC Network, your side bets with Peter Burns. We've seen all the theatrics you have on the show. Have you finalized a bet for this week?
It's been tough. You know, this year with the game being in week three, it got on us quickly. And there's a lot of pressure. You know, every year you feel like you got to outdo the previous year. And honestly, I don't know that we'll ever have one like the baseball bet from the College World Series finals. I mean, having to wear the LSU baseball uniform through the airport in Gainesville and Charlotte and Nashville through the hotel, it was pretty humbling. But we finally came up with something. I think it'll be seasonally appropriate, and we'll have some fun with it, man. I'm not as optimistic that Peter will be wearing the uniform again. As he had to do last year, but you know, we'll see, man.
Chris, one of the most interesting clips that I heard this offseason was Urban Meyer talking about the 2006 basketball title and how that propelled the football team in the fall, and Florida would obviously go on to win the national championship in football that year too. When you were in school, Florida basketball made their first ever Final Four. Spurrier obviously had football rolling to SEC championships by 94. But what was it like as a player on the football team seeing the basketball program achieve that kind of unprecedented success? And did you kind of feel that same sort of momentum carry over from the spring into the fall?
I think there's always a pride that we have as athletes, you know, when other sports in the athletic department are doing well. You know, we all eat together. You spend time together in classes and tutoring sessions. So you know everybody really well. I think football has a huge responsibility, not only financially to help, you know, fuel the other sports, but you set the tone. Football sets the tone for what goes on through the rest of the academic calendar. And you've seen, you know, I think Alabama's a great example of what football did to raise the standard for what Alabama has become and so many other sports, including basketball. We took great pride in the success that Coach Donovan's teams had. I guess actually it was Lon Kruger first and then Billy Donovan. But that 94 team, we were in the middle of spring practice, and I remember being upset because we had a scrimmage on that Saturday. Couldn't go to the Final Four in Charlotte that year, but we were all paying great attention and cheering those guys on. I mean, Clayton Bates, who was on that team, was one of my best friends that played with me at PK Young, so I got to be friends with Andrew DeClercq and Dan Cross. Dan Cross is a great friend of mine today. Craig Brown, I mean, so many of those guys were – we're great friends, and there really is a brotherhood amongst all the athletic teams in the UAA.
That's awesome. I got a broad question for you, Chris, but any favorite Steve Spurrier stories that you have, whether it be related to LSU or not?
Yeah, I don't. Well, I mean, are we allowed to cuss on here or no? What's the current rule?
Sure. Yeah. You're right with it.
13.
Now, well, so I told you about the atmosphere, and it was one that was a little bit dead there that day, and I mentioned earlier. Well, I may not have mentioned it, but like I've told this story before, Coach didn't like the F word. You're able to say every year he write on the board, shit, damn, and hell. You could say those things, but you couldn't say the F word. And that rule changed on Saturdays sometimes, depending on how plays went. And Brian Schottenheimer, who we saw make his debut as the head coach for the Cowboys, was one of our backup quarterbacks. He was also the play signaler. And I ran a little shallow cross on third down, and the ball hit me in the hands. I dropped it. And somehow it bounced right back up to me, and I spiked it and got a 15-yard penalty. I came off the field, and Shotty goes, yeah, he just motherfucked you. So he always, you know, kind of had a heartbeat of what was going on out there with Coach and what he was saying about us behind our backs. But my favorite thing about Coach is just, you know, the way that he'd motivate you. It wasn't necessarily, you know, a guy that was yelling at you. It was the sarcasm that would get you the most. And anybody that's ever played for him has heard after making a mistake, Chris, it's not your fault. It's my fault for putting you in there. And that was just one of the things you dreaded hearing from him. And certainly, you know, I think all of us have had a time that we can remember that on practice fields or game fields along the way.
Well, great, Chris. I know you, you're a busy man, but we appreciate taking time out of your afternoon to do this show with us. You can watch Chris on your televisions, SEC Network. You have a great time in Baton Rouge, and we hope Peter Burns is the loser of your bet, and we hope to, you know, find out what the end result is come Monday. So thank you again.
Yeah. Just let's go ahead and get him two in a row. Would be nice to have him having to pay off that bet. So I appreciate you guys having me.
Awesome.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Thanks,
guys. Good.
Yep.
Good to go. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
That show was presented by Norris and Norris PA. We thank those guys again for sponsoring us. They're based out of Lake City, Florida, and again, preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. Give Guy a call at 386-752-7240. Well, guys, that was awesome.
That was awesome. How cool was that?
It's good stuff right there. That's awesome.
Yeah, we had the opportunity. I got to go to the Round of 64 game with Chris in Indianapolis in 2024. That's how I got to meet him a little bit. And being a Gainesville native myself, we kind of hit it off and had a great time. So we've been in communication since. And then the three of us on this podcast, along with Will Norris, were in San Antonio for this year's Final Four run and championship game. And Chris was there. So we all got to hang out with him, meet him. And it was just a blast. So story from and perspective from Chris himself. So Hunter, what stuck out to you and his insight?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we all know it, that the rivalries change, and he makes a good point. It feels like the Florida Gators just have, you know, two hands it takes to count all the rivalries, right? But it was interesting him talking about what the LSU rivalry looked like back then and what it looks like now. But he made some really cool points. I think the one when you brought up the driving range, his comment there, he's right? DJ's only been taking the mental reps, and so watching that rust come off, hopefully he's able to, you know, lead us to victory this weekend. But that was an awesome interview. Chris was great to talk to.
Yeah, it's really cool that an All-American took the time to talk to a few idiots like us. He sat a couple of rows behind us at the national championship game, and after the after we won and confetti's falling and people are hugging all over each other, I turned around and Chris Doering standing there two rows behind me, just kind of pointed and shook our fists. And, you know, it was really cool seeing a guy that, you know, we see on TV and kind of has to put on the national media hat, conference-wide media hat for a while, seeing him, how passionate he is about the University of Florida still and how much he loves the Gators and still supports the Gators. That was really, really cool, guys. What a cool opportunity.
Yeah, and I liked his input. You know, he played for Spurrier, who's the king of rotating quarterbacks. We kind of get tired of it a little bit. We saw Mullen do that with a few guys. But for him to stick by DJ despite his, you know, performances these first 2 weeks, you know, he's the guy that's going to lead us to a playoff spot if this season turns around and starts this week against LSU. So, you know, the offense does need a spark, but the spark needs to be by the guy that has the keys to the car, that's DJ Lagway. So I did like that despite his history with the guy that would rotate you out and, you know, blame himself for putting you in that position.
Something I'm a little interested to see too is the first two opponents we've played, we've out-athleted. So their strategy and their game plan has been keep everything in front. We'll play cover three. We're about to play the best athletes that we've seen all year. And the benefit of that in a way could be that they run their defense and whatever their defense is, that's what they do. So whether it's cover two, cover one, cover three, it's going to be interesting to see if more of those shots are available to DJ because LSU's confident in their corners, because they have those athletes that they think they can go man-to-man with our receivers. Just something that is going to be interesting to watch for the offense to see if there's more opportunities for DJ to take those shots downfield that we've all kind of been searching for here in these first 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing I'm looking forward to is we talked about it in the show after the first game, and you guys talked about it after the second game a little bit. But I mentioned Jaden Baugh being, you know, RB1 in this rotation. I think I texted you guys throughout the game. It's so frustrating when he does the a series for you, and everyone can so clearly see that Baugh's the guy. I think I know the answer, but I'm interested to see if he changed that at all against LSU. I say I think I know the answer because I feel that Billy can be stubborn and it's still going to be that rotation, but I can't imagine they turn on that film, watch the first drive, look back at the snap count. Jaden Baugh needs to be carrying the rock more, so I'll be looking for that this weekend.
I agree, and I'm jealous you guys are going to be there in person, live in Death Valley. I've been once since 2015, Treon Harris's, I think it was his first career start after Greer got suspended, and that place was electric. So I know when we got off the bus from New Orleans into Baton Rouge, you could see all the Gators being rolled and smoked and grilled, and it's just an awesome time. So, you know, we'll wrap it up, but quickly, score predictions, fellas. I think we were 9.5-point dogs on the opening line. I think we've got that down to about 6.5, so less than a touchdown, which is a little bit surprising considering what we've put on tape the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. I know what my brain's telling me, and I know what my heart's telling me. I'm trying to read Vegas and make sense of how you can watch what we did against South Florida and say that the number three team in the country at home at night is only 7 points better than that team. So with that being said, I think that the game's going to look very similar to how the South Florida game looks. I thought Chris made a great point that under Billy Napier, we see our team play at the level of the competition that we're playing against, for better or for worse. So I think that we're going to go into a hostile environment against a very good LSU team and play a game that's close. I can't predict us to win after what happened last week. I would say I'm looking at 27-20 type of game that is maddening and frustrating, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if we watch this team go into Baton Rouge after laying an egg last week and come away with a win. But can't predict it. I'll go 27-20 LSU.
I feel very similarly. I wrote down 27-21, Devin, no joke. So a point off, but 27 LSU, 21 Florida. I do think there is a chance we come out and you just see a different team. I'm sure that's the optimist in me. You know, most Gator fans are watching that saying you're delusional. It just feels like, oh, you lose to USF, season's over, and then we come out, you know, tail on fire and play a good, tough game. I do think we'll see a close one, but I don't quite see a victory.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you guys, and got the Gators at that 20-point mark as well. And I got LSU 31-20 as the victors, and Florida moving to 1-2 before going on the road to another top five opponent in Miami. But the optimism in me says, all right, it's a night game in Death Valley. You should be able to wake up and play these type of ball games. And you know, if we get the DJ, a little bit of the DJ lag away from last year at the end of the season, Jaden Ball gets 20-plus carries. I don't know why we don't compete. You know, it's really just one or two potential big plays that can change the game. USF had that 65-yard touchdown. Why can't the Gators do something similar or get a big pick in a critical time?
Hey, Jackson, spot the ball.
Spot the ball.
Spot the ball, right?
We're only 20-20 spotting the ball. And you and Dev gave him credit being 41 games. Here's his number 41st game. Let's see if he can get above 500 again.
Yeah, that was my mistake. Maybe it was a premonition.
Well, any last thoughts, fellas, before I know you guys fly out this morning or Thursday morning to hit on Baton Rouge?
Wish us luck, man. I've heard great things about LSU fans. Hospitality is their middle name. They're going to be real nice to us. I'm sure they'll, you know, pat us on the back and wish us luck. So, yeah, say a prayer.
Awesome, guys. You enjoy it. And, again, we are a member of the Stadium and Gale Network. And this show is sponsored by Norris and Norris PA. Their website is down on our banner. Go visit them if you need assistance with will, trust, all their services you can find on their website. So we appreciate Mr. Guy Norris with his sponsorship. And we'll see you guys Sunday morning again for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators.